Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back, everybody, on this Wednesday afternoon, right here on Newstalk A3 WCCO. Andy Slavitt has joined us before. And Andy Slavitt, to me, is one of the voices I've looked to during COVID-19. It's not easy to go in depth on Twitter, but Andy will give you threads on complicated issues. He now has come out with a podcast, In the Bubble, with Andy Slavitt. He is the former acting administrator of the Centers for Medicare and Medicare Services during the Obama administration. And Andy is with us on the CenterPoint Energy Home Services Plus hotline. Andy, thanks for your time. I want to start with the Washington model, which a lot of people have cited so far, including the administration, when there was talk of over 100,000 fatalities related to COVID, and maybe even higher. And now their new modeling has dropped precipitously. It's still a number that we all view as unacceptable and tragic beyond belief, but now it's down to 60,000 or so. When you've watched this information, what strikes you most about the change in this data?
Well, nice to be here, Chad. So first of all, I think, abstracting from the model a second, we're about 2 weeks plus out when most states put in place their orders to close bars and restaurants and keep people socially isolated.
Sure.
And indeed, the data show that it is working, that we are able to reduce the infection rate when we do this. And if you look at, say, the West Coast, San Francisco and Seattle, they've done a spectacular job of that because they got at it early. New York was probably a week late, and Detroit and New Orleans. And so some of what we're seeing there is popping up, and it's going to be what we have to deal with. I think the real question, and the modelers have to deal with, is sort of what do we all do next? Because the model's only as good as our own behavior. So I think it's encouraging, but it's challenging for people. We know it's challenging for people economically. We know it's challenging for people psychologically. We know it's challenging for a lot of reasons. I suspect what we'll have next is hotspots in Texas and Florida and Georgia. And one of the things that it's hard for the model to do is account for dynamic changes. So they have to keep rerunning it. And in Texas and Georgia, they have tested less than a quarter of the population. And they were, of course, later, as was Florida, to socially isolate. So I suspect we're going to be dealing with the same thing we're seeing in New York. Hopefully not to the point where we can't manage it. But in the southeast of the country, and if we keep doing our jobs and we keep staying in and managing through this, I think we are going to see an improved outcome.
So once again, the president last night on Sean Hannity talked about this idea that he would love a national day, like where the entire country can be open. But you also continue to hear reports where the administration would like to take areas which are not hotspots, where the numbers are down, and allow dramatic modifications of a stay-at-home order. I get the positive of that. We want the economy to come back. We want people to feel some normalcy. What is your biggest concern about that if we allow greater latitude city by city, state by state, compared to what's taking place nationally right now?
So first of all, I think it's really important to listen to Anthony Fauci, and I think it's important for the president to listen to Anthony Fauci. I think at the same time, the president was saying that Fauci was saying, you know, there isn't a flip a switch moment. And what he means by that is it's really based on conditions on the ground. You know, we've described this as a war. You know, I think as much as, to use an analogy, as much as we'd like to bring troops home from Afghanistan, when we have to do it based on conditions on the ground. And in this case, conditions on the ground are based upon how well have we contained the virus in the community, how much testing capability do we have, and do we have the ability to track and trace? So if the virus breaks out again, we don't get to uncontrollable moments. So that's not going to happen until those resources are there and ready. And so, you know, I agree with your point that we would like to see, you know, Trump would certainly like to see that happen. It doesn't mean that it can happen responsibly. One other thing I just want to say very quickly is there's no I think this thinking about this as our public health versus the economy is unfortunately not the choice we have in front of us, because what happens is if we let folks back to work and start going normal again and we haven't beat the public health crisis, very unlikely that companies are going to start hiring again and the consumers are going to start spending again. So I think what everyone's looking for is, do we really have a handle on it? And if we really have a handle on it, can we act then?
Andy Slavitt is with us. Andy, I want to talk about two things here that you're doing. First, the podcast, In the Bubble, and what you're trying to provide there. And then how, when you're giving some of your daily updates, and it's through lengthy threads, and how that is different from what a lot of people are seeing on Twitter alone. We get greater depth in other areas, but with your knowledge in this, with your expertise, with your ability to reach out, what are you trying to do? What information are you trying to convey in those two different platforms?
Well, I'll start with Twitter. I think, you know, I'm someone who has really the privilege of being able to have access to all kinds of people directly, whether they're governors, the White House, manufacturers of masks or anything else, tests. And so I made a commitment when I left government that I wasn't going to use that privilege to be an insider, but I was going to try to use that privilege to be a helper. And so what I try to do is put forward what I learn and what I know in a way that attempts to be thoughtful and attempts to give people what I'm hearing and seeing. I do a call many nights with scientists and Homeland Security experts, and they do a risk assessment and they give me information. And what they tell me are things that are usually kept inside some wall veil of secrecy. Mm-hmm. And I think it's wrong. I mean, I think we have a public that can handle understanding what people are saying, what the truth is. And of course, things change on the ground all the time. So what you're hearing is only as good as that day. On the podcast, In the Bubble, which we just launched, interesting story there is, it was actually my 18-year-old son, Zach's idea. He said, hey, Dad, should we do a podcast? And of course, you know, my first reaction was, my 18-year-old son never asked me to do anything with him.
Right. So whatever you say, yes, let's hang out.
Like, yes, of course. And then after that, we started thinking about what kind of podcast do we want to be. And I describe it as 50% Winston Churchill, 50% Fred Rogers. It is, you know, reporting during wartime, giving people what they need to hear, but also doing it in a way that is helpful and gentle. And the idea is that the whole family can sit around and listen to the podcast together. Yep. It's not like watching a Chiron on CNN where you just see crazy numbers all the time out of context. So we've had some really terrific folks on. We had put a podcast up today with Governor Phil Murphy, who's on Ground Zero in New Jersey, and what he's dealing with. And you can hear he and I talking about how to help New Jersey, and we actually took action on the call. So, you know, he's kind enough to let me record that on the podcast. So hopefully it's a different kind of a experience for people and one that brings them a little bit of hope and a little bit of joy.
I'll let you go after this. You also drew attention to the 60-plus million Americans who face some sort of disability, some sort of physical, some sort of cognitive challenge, and what can happen during a pandemic like this. Just expand on this and what you're seeing. I mean, we're seeing just horrific racial disparities and a lot of attention drawn to that, and should, because it's completely unacceptable. But on those folks who are facing some of these physical and intellectual challenges and how they are being treated or mistreated during these times.
I'm really glad you asked. Look, this when this is all done, there's going to be two questions. How many lives did we lose, and how did we behave along the way to what did we do to help? And it will be a really dark stain on this period of time if we make decisions in a crisis that abandon our values. So there are a number of states, and you know, Texas is one, but there's others that are trying to figure out how to make the very difficult decision of who should get into an ICU unit or have access to a ventilator. And there are things that are written up which suggest there are people who live on ventilators every day in the disability community. And there's suggestions that maybe they ought to be taken off of those ventilators to give them to people who have a better, quote-unquote, quality of life. And I think that ought to be disturbing to us because we've never made decisions before about whose life is more valuable than somebody else's. And deciding that somebody is going to have a lower quality of life and we're therefore going to take a ventilator and give it to somebody else because of some decision that gets made is really the wrong answer. We have scarce resources, but as Americans, we are incredibly resourceful. And we should make a commitment to people who often get left behind, people in the disability community, people of color, low-income people, older people, that we're going to do everything possible to protect them. If we do that, we're going to come through this. If we don't, it will likely be a stain in American history, much the same way internment camps and other things have been.
That's very well stated, and it's powerful, and I hope a lot of people hear that part of the story. I enjoyed the conversation. I really appreciate the threads you're offering up and the podcast. Hope we can do this again, and thank you so much for coming on.
Great talking to you again. Stay well.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.